Good evening, I am Josh Beister, and welcome to another episode of the Perceptive Podcast. Tonight is probably going to be our most topical edition of the Perceptive Podcast, as we are discussing Valve's recent implementation and then removal of monetizing mods on the Steam Workshop. This is a very interesting topic, as it really has a lot for the future of modding communities and really game development in general. So before we get going with that, let me introduce our guest for tonight. First, he is GameWisdom Psych Designer, artist for Smugby Games, and he's currently working on revising GameWisdom to 2.0. Please welcome Kenneth Olm.
Hi there.
And he is the co-founder of Artisans, as well as the lead designer on the game. And Artisans is a game that's all about custom user-generated content. Please welcome Charles Amos.
Hello, everybody. Happy to be here.
Yep, it's great to have both of you on. Charles, I know we just had our big educational games cast a few weeks ago, and we're going to hopefully try to do another edition of that soon. And it'll be great to have more of your thoughts on the topic.
Yeah, plenty to say.
Yep. And Ken, it's been like a few months, I think, since we last had you on the cast. I've had so many indie guests, they've been filling up all my podcast time.
That's a good thing.
Oh, yeah. And because this is topical, I can mention the fact that this week I have three podcasts on three different topics and guests all lined up. So my throat's going to be dead by like Thursday at this rate.
Oh, just make sure you have a glass of water with you.
Oh, yeah. I got bottles of water ready for me. All right. But with that, let's get into this topic. So for those of you who missed the big news, here's a brief recap. The Steam Workshop has been a integrated part of Steam that allows modders to easily and readily create mods and update them into games, and also allows consumers to subscribe to them and then download the latest version. It avoids a lot of the muss and the fuss of the old days, where you had to search for mods on various third-party sites, hope they get updated, and then have to find said updates whenever they happen. So the workshop has been very popular over the last few years. Some of the big examples, and those we'll probably talk about later in this cast, would be games like Counter-Strike Go, Team Fortress, and Skyrim. Now, the big news last week was that Valve started the ability for modders to price or sell their mods specifically for Skyrim at the moment. And how it worked was that modders could set a price. It could be a penny to, you know, $10, $100, whatever. They could also set a pay-as-you-want price. So the consumer could specifically say, I'll give you 2 cents for this, or I'll give you $2, anything like that. And the royalties were split 25% to the modder, and then the remaining goes to Valve and to Bethesda. Now, this has met with a whole lot of arguments and discussions from both consumers and modders, and it got very heated, and as of this past Monday, by the time you hear the podcast, Valve basically turned around their decision and removed the feature and refunded anyone who spent the money. And I almost forgot, one other point, anyone who buys a mod would get a 24-hour refund grace period. So if the mod didn't work or they didn't like it, they could return it back for full profit. So even though this decision has been repealed for right now, we all feel like it is going to come back. And that's why we wanted to still have this podcast discussion. Now, before I ask both you and Charles your thoughts on this, I want to briefly read a quote that I got from a modder that I reached out to over the weekend. This is Brian Shannon. He goes by the handle of Goya on Steam, and he's recently rose to some popularity on the City Skyline workshop for making a lot of custom content and buildings on there. He was also a former Maxis artist who, when the studio closed earlier this year, he's now been doing this free time. And he has a Patreon campaign up that people can support him while he creates new content. So his opinion is that he feels that mods should be donation-based and be free to all players. If someone likes the mod enough and finds enjoyment in it, then they can go the extra mile to contribute to it. He also felt that the 75% take from Valve and Bethesda was very high for this type of deal. Specifically because of the fact that he uses Patreon, and they basically give the content creator 90% of the proceeds. So he's going to continue making mods, and he's going to continue using Patreon as an option. But if that ever found its way to, say, Skylines, he would keep with the Patreon option. And interestingly enough, Colossal Order, the developer behind City Skylines, released a statement over the weekend saying that they will not tolerate anyone selling mods. You're fine with going the Patreon donation route, but if they catch you trying to price mods, if the system would have kept in line, they would have banned it and, you know, punished you for it. So, after that brief story, I guess, I'm going to turn it over to you guys and ask what your thoughts on the matter. And we'll start with you, Ken, because you have done modding in the past for Skyrim, and you have probably a good insight into the community.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's one of the oldest, or at least most popular modded game is Skyrim and the Fallout series, any of the Bethesda games. Mm-hmm. And the way it works is, and this is why it was getting so broken, I think, at least I think that Valve didn't really understand what they were getting into, is what you do is you get an amalgamation of different kinds of mods to kind of sculpt the experience you want. Now, for me, I want realism. So I want like high textures. I want, varied NPCs. I do height, color, different types of physics, waves, like all these like really small things that adds to a very immersive experience. Mm-hmm. Other people go for things that are really silly. Like maybe they want to replace all the dragons with, Macho Man Randy Savage, and they want to have all their swords be dildos, whatever. It's Wild West. That's the beauty of it. Mm-hmm. And the thing is that it's all about trial and error. You try this, you try that. Sometimes it breaks, sometimes it doesn't. But in the end of the day, you're making Skyrim even a more fulfilled game than it was even originally designed to be. Mm-hmm. And that's a beautiful thing. And they've always been so hands off, and they actually encouraged a lot of modding and gave people tools to do their own modifications. In fact, there was a huge mod called, I don't remember exactly the name. I think it's Felxer. Mm-hmm. I should probably look that up. But some guy spent a year of his life doing it, and he used it as an application to work at Bethesda. He ended up working at Bungie. Mm-hmm. But it was a game with huge amount of 30 plus hours with NPCs professionally voice acted, and he did all the animations and made all these level designs, and it wouldn't be possible if the mod community didn't support something like that. And Bethesda's tools that they actually gave them, which is really bizarre for them to even decide to start trying to monetize mods in the first place. And I think that's the big conflict, is now that you're paying for mods, and by the way, some mods were more expensive than the game itself. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of just a lot of technical issues and legality issues that go with it,
Yeah. And I just want to clarify for people listening, Ken, when you say that you download mods for realism, a lot of little mods, stuff like that, these are obviously not one mod from one person. You're downloading multiple mods from multiple content creators.
Right? Hundreds and hundreds of mods, yes. If you look at my profile on Steam, you can see I have a bunch of collections of Skyrim screenshots and stuff like that, testing out all these different kind of mods and experiences. Mm-hmm. And it's so different from what they originally intended in the original look. It's a lot more vivid. It has a lot more just detail. Example, because I'm looking at it with virtual reality, I want to look at things up close. So I want to make sure everything is the highest it can go. But again, because now that you're paying for mods and of their horrible refund policy of 24 hours, you never know when a mod's going to break something, or if other mods conflict with other mods. There's just a lot of complicated. And actually, this is the big thing to me, too, is when you buy software online, you expect it to be updated, maintained, etc. Yes. But for mods, people make something, then they, decide they're done with it.
Fire and forget, basically.
Right, and then someone else takes it, and that's it. And then we have, as soon as this happened, thievery were bad. People just downloaded a bunch of mods, put it up for sale, use it as their own. Mm-hmm. It was just awful. And by the way, even though Steam Workshop is really easy to use, mm-hmm. it has been very effective for modding. Nexus, Skyrim Nexus, which is a website that has their own kind of program for installing, uninstalling, and just categorizing your modifications, also works just as well and has modifications that Steam Workshop doesn't have. So a lot of the bizarre stuff, the weird stuff, is on Nexus. Mm-hmm. And what you're doing is you are incentivizing the people to take their mods off Nexus, not not allow it to be free, a lot, and make everything more competitive. Also, if you don't take it off, people can steal it. So there's a lot of reasons why you wouldn't use Nexus and have to use Workshop. And like, it's just, it goes against everything the mods are all about, which is freedom, experimentation, collaboration. In fact, before this decision was even made, you know, modders and games were pretty tight. You know, there were gamers enthusiasts, you know, there were gamer plus plus, right? And now by Valve doing it, make all models look like scumbags and, you know, money grubbers. And that's not really the case. I mean, if you read, there was this this modder who made a post about it, and he made the efficient game. And he, you know, he charged it, and he said that one day he woke up and he got a letter from Valve and Bethesda saying, hey, do you want to make money off a mod? Because we like what you do. And of course, this is like striking gold, right? Yeah. This is like striking oil. Like, this is, you have to jump this opportunity. And he spent a month and a half to work on it with his partner, and he was not expecting this kind of backlash. And also, it was implied that either he takes 25% or nothing. So he says, why not do it? He loves doing mods. He loves the game. Why not try to make some money off it? Sure. It didn't seem like, it didn't seem nefarious at the time.
Yeah. And we'll talk more about the entitlement or the pricing concerns in a few minutes. We'll come back to that topic. But I do want to send this over to Charles now. And Charles, as someone who's developing a game that is all about custom content, what did you think about this whole Steam Workshop monetization situation?
I think it's certainly nuanced and interesting. I want to play devil's advocate a bit just to get a voice in support of the idea of monetizing, because I think it's worth exploring, because you guys have said previously, I think this isn't going away, even though they reversed their decision on Monday. It's going to come back. They're just going to implement it differently, roll out differently. I think a couple interesting things. One is that they attempted to do this with an existing community, and that was, you know, when they acknowledged that they had made a mistake, that was, I think, the first thing they said is, like, we probably shouldn't have used Skyrim. We probably shouldn't have, like, jumped into a modding community that is well-established. And then, and all these things have been free, and we're going to suddenly put price tags on? Whoa, no, 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 no. You can't make things that used to be free suddenly cost money without upsetting people. That's that's true in any product market. I think this could work in principle. With one of Valve's own games, honestly, just because I think they could roll it out better. But what it speaks to is that a modder who makes money off their mod is a different person. They're a different developer than a modder who does it for the love of it. Those are different communities, and it's not like the modding community was just waiting to be able to, you know, make money on their product. Like, that isn't what has been motivating them, obviously, because they would have stopped doing it. And the assumption that, of course, they wanted to make money, I think it's true for, you know, some people, but it's not true for that whole community. But I think there is a community that doesn't yet exist that Steam wants to form by saying, hey, you developer who's in college or grad school, I bet you've wanted to make a mod, but, like, you don't want to do it for free. You know, your time is valuable. But if you could make some money off of it, maybe that would put you over the edge. Now you're going to actually spend the summer working on that mod, because, you know, you're going to make $1,000 or, you know, or maybe a whole lot. Who knows? And Steam is hoping it's going to create more Dotas and CSGOs and Killing Floors, like the mods that turn into big new games, or even, heck, whole new genres. Like, maybe by putting money into the equation, you could actually incentivize some of that. And that's a hypothesis that they're hoping and interested to test. So I think that's part of, I think the conflict is trying to put this on an existing community was a mistake. And I think we will see them roll it out again in a different way.
Okay.
By the way, I think you make a great point that they shouldn't have done it with an existing community. It just doesn't make any sense in terms of how the community actually works and how the people use the modifications. So it's like if, you know, you took a road to work every day and suddenly they put like a toll booth like between you and your work.
This road was free.
Yeah, exactly. And then, like, you know, like, after that, there's
gonna be bad.
Just
you got a new road with a new toll on it, and you're, and it's like a special fancy new road, and you're like, all right, I guess this is a toll road. And the other thing is, like, this isn't forcing everyone who makes mods to charge money. You can still have free mods. Mm-hmm. But I think the feeling amongst the community is, yeah, but why would you not charge now?
Yeah.
If you could.
I mean, honestly, exactly. You did all this work. Why not charge?
And like, everyone else was charging.
Right. Yeah. So it's pretty much
the complications of like my mod actually has some content from someone else's mod because they used to be free and that was okay. But now I want to make some money. But, you know, like all the specifics and that all those problems come from the fact that it's an existing community that was free.
I mean, the mods that I think Valve is used to and understand and how they built their company, it's far different from the way the mod community works. It just in, you know, Bethesda games. Like, just doesn't, it would be horrifying because there's so many mods that come out for really minute things. So if I were to, like, my modded Skyrim 100 plus things, that would be like thousands and thousands of dollars and most of it would break. You know, it would be awful.
You just wouldn't have gotten those. You'd have like four or five mods maybe and they'd be the biggest ones, the most polished stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm. Right. And by the way, this isn't good for the modders that actually participate in the program. They have a lot of PR and stuff that they have to handle. And I think for the most part, some of them, like again, like the fishing guy made a big post about it. And I think people have forgiven him. And he's actually wanted to step out of modding because of this, which is sad because he was so talented. And Hot and Cold is a very popular, really, really popular one for Skyrim, which was about like varying like temperatures and weather and conditions that came along with weather. And, you know, I think we don't know if they're even going to come back to Nexus or anything. I don't know whether it's going to happen to them. The only person that really came out bad is someone made Sky UI, which is like an alternate version UI system for Skyrim because it was, you know, meant for a console and they made it PC friendly. And I think he kind of said, screw you, everyone, I'm making money. And then now that they reversed it, his reputation is probably pretty bad. But the thing is that he speaks for a whole team, so he makes the team look bad. But the team members didn't feel that way, but the guy did that published it.
Right.
Yeah. And
so go ahead.
What I was gonna say is, I think Charles, you brought up a really good point about probably the big mistake Valve did was try to attach this again to the Skyrim community, which, as both of you have talked about, it's been around for several years now. And as you said, another good point, Charles, you can't put a price on something that was originally free. People are going to get very pissed off about that. And I think Valve was trying to capture that lightning in the bottle that they had with the polycount pack with Team Fortress 2. But the thing with that was there was no modding in Team Fortress previously. You couldn't put stuff up on Team Fortress or try to sell it, you know, before they actually did the whole itemization monetization angle. So when they did implement the polycount pack and they did say, oh, we're going to start selling items, this was a brand new experience. This was ground floor stuff. So people were able to get in and do something that was never before seen. But with Skyrim, as both of you said, there are hundreds, if not thousands upon thousands of mods on there that have all been made for free. And now people are trying to, you know, rescind on that and say, oh, that thing you got for free, now I want $15 for it, or I want $2 or whatever. And again, that rubs people the wrong way.
Right. And I was kind of in a panic mode when they announced this. I started downloading mods like crazy. I'm like, all right, got to get all these mods before they go away. Like, they're all going to be on workshop soon and they're going to be gone forever. So I started just downloading, like, my girlfriend was like, what are you doing? Why are you taking all this bandwidth away? Like, I need this now.
Yeah. It's almost like a looting or something, you know, like,
yeah.
Everything's about to go, which is funny because you can go the opposite direction, right? You can charge money for something and then make it free later. Mm-hmm. People love that. That's great.
Yeah.
I mean, right. It can come with some complications when you move to a free-to-play model and you were pay before, but, you know, Team Fortress 2 made the transition relatively smoothly and, you know, has a bigger community because of it. And now they've got all the microtransaction hats and they're making money hand over fist and, you know, people complain about it a little bit, but it doesn't stop anyone from having a whole lot of fun.
Yeah, and I was just going to reiterate the point. I recently spoke to another developer from Flipfly who did Race the Sun, and he basically said the same thing. In terms of pricing, you can never go up. Once you set a price or something, you can only really go down. And this really boils down to everything was set to free, and now everyone's trying to bump up the price. And again, you just can't do that without pissing off the consumers.
Important counterexample is Minecraft that has steadily increased its price.
And so has
month after month after month.
So has Kerbal Space Program. program. That was like originally $5-6 when it was, you know, way back like Alpha 0.001. And yeah. I think it's now being released at $40. But in that situation, they basically told everyone from the beginning, hey, this is going to become more expensive as time goes on. There was no hidden fees or anything. They basically said, you want it cheaper? Buy it now. Because when it's out, we're going to charge full price for this thing.
Yeah. And that like that points to a key word, which is expectations, yes. right? You can't defy those. When you defy them, you upset people. So if you set the expectation, all right, we're going to start off low. We're gonna, or even if with the Skyrim modding stuff, had they said, you know, we're thinking of allowing modders to charge money, and they had first not rolled it out, but even just asked the community or anything.
Well, yeah, this was
just ease in they expectations.
Just did it.
They just, yeah. I mean, then that's very well, right? They are experimenters. They like to just do really big, bold changes, and many times they work out awesomely. And that's something that I want to talk about is that we're not talking about EA or Capcom or Konami. We're talking about Valve, and Valve is a special a special company in game development, right?
They like are the they are exceptions loved. To so many rules,
and they have so much goodwill. People often feel like they just can do no wrong, and I feel like over the past maybe 3 or 4 years, there have been more little things where people are like, I don't really like their early access game stuff. I don't really like how they're you know, doing the free-to-play TF2. I don't really like how nobody's interested in making Half-Life 3. There's been more little chatter of, you know, I don't like this decision. And I wonder if some of that came to, you know, was a bit of the straw that broke the back with this, that it felt like, oh, you know, they're just trying to make a buck again. Yeah, go ahead.
No, I'm just saying, like, it's weird because Valve and Bethesda are both like the golden childs, right? They can't touch that. They've done, and both of them made this colossal mistake, and now everyone questions them. You know,
like the 75% thing, I think, is a big problem.
Yeah,
had it been really generous to modders, I think this would have gone down differently.
Yeah,
iTunes. You know, they take 30% or something like that. Like that's Apple, and they're
this is like, flipped.
Yeah, I know. I mean, and Apple's known to be super evil with their money. Come on now. But it's just wild. Why did they decide to do that? I really think it's Bethesda Corporate. Like, not Bethesda, but what is it? ZeniMax Works? Like, those guys were like, you know what? Take 90%. What? Not too much? 75%. I'm like, okay.
Because that's in part why they've been hesitant to, why they wanted to legally lock down benefiting financially from mods. It's like, well, yeah, but we made the game. You guys are just tweaking some scripts. Like, why should you make any money off of that? That doesn't make sense. We made it. And like, sometimes that's true, but mods have such a ridiculous range in, oh, this guy just tweaked a couple speed values, you know, in Lua, versus, you know, this guy essentially just used your engine and made an entirely new game, new genre, new everything, you know, did the voice acting. Like, that seems like he should probably make the majority of the money on that.
And it's strange because, again, Bethesda's been so open to it, the modding community. And, you know, Valve, like, a lot of their games were based on mods. So for them to do this, it seems to the public, even though it wasn't their intention, it's a straight-up money grab. And with that percentage, it doesn't help them. It only reinforces it.
It is interesting to hear they've made very little money. I mean, it was only up for like, you know, a weekend. But,
$10,000, that was it.
But and he estimates that the community support cost is well over $1 million. Took a huge loss on this.
I really want to know whose idea was it. Like, who? Everyone wants to know. Like, who was it? People theorize it's more Bethesda. Was it, or was it really Valve?
It's got to be a partnership. You know, I mean, it is. In the end, it's Valve's marketplace, right? So it's their decision, and I'm sure they went to Bethesda with this idea of, hey, we want to start rolling out a marketplace for mods, and we think your product would be a great first fit. You guys have a huge, vibrant modding community. We can just drop this right on them. What do you guys think about a revenue? You know, what kind of split would you need to say yes to people making money off of your game? And, you know, they went back into the back room, I'm sure, and they cooked up a number that they were all okay with. Maybe the modding community isn't okay with, but it would be a take it or leave it situation, right? Either make nothing or make 25%.
Mm-hmm. And that's like a shakedown.
Yeah, you know? Kinda. And everyone else is going to be charging. So if you don't, you're just leaving money on the table. You're leaving pennies on the table.
Right. I mean, it also there's some companies that try to use the situation to enhance their PR. For example, like Rockstar was said, like, we don't touch modder, we don't even care, let's let it, whatever. And then
that's a separate community, you guys do what you want, we'll support you, you know, indirectly.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And that's smart thing to say, because like they rose up in a lot, like, yeah, they're awesome. And then, you know, City Skyline, I think the biggest one, saying that if anyone does try to make money off mods, we will, you know, go after them legally. I'm like, there you go. That's the spirit. And everyone wanted to hear that. So they got a huge bump, because they were already riding pretty high on public opinion because of SimCity's terribleness. Mm-hmm. And them saying that, it pushed them over the edge. Like, they're pretty godly right now.
Yeah. It's interesting stuff. And I do think it will be interesting to see if something like this ever does get rolled out and is successful. Like, what will that look like? Is it just, do we even call them mods? You know, maybe it's something different. It's just a crowdsourced DLC.
Right? See, that's exactly what I'm thinking too. Because you can't charge for those mini mods. Like, you can't, again, during the weekend, people sold swords for, like, that was reskinned for $100, horse genitals, $100.
Right. Yeah. And like, and the market would eventually probably settle out, the cream would rise to the top, but like, it would take a while.
Yeah.
Because like you said before, mods are Wild West-ish. And money and markets are, you know, places of order and sense eventually. And yeah, when you just try to merge those together, you're going to get the beggar, the give me money for no reason mod. And you're going to get that kind of commentary. And already, even just free mods, when you went out to download something, you never really knew what you were going to get. You'd read reviews, basically, and see how many people have downloaded this, and you try to pick up the chatter. Like, is this a common mod? Is this like a must-have mod? You know, is this going to like totally screw up my game? Is this even the latest version? How often do they update it? That was sort of and it still is, obviously, that's the dance that you engage in when you go in and try to download a new mod. And combining that with a purchasing decision is like really, really weird.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, some of the big ones that I always download were $30. I'm like, that's a game. I could almost buy The Witcher 3.
I don't think I would. I heard people in comments talking about that. The prices just didn't make any sense to them, because full games, multiple full great indie games, are the cost of this like one mod for Skyrim. It's like, no, you come back and you know, build a great $10 indie game, build three of them, and I'll pay you for that, but I'm not going to pay you $30 for like tweaking my water. That's crazy.
Yeah, the whole devalue. I mean, we're having an issue with game devaluation as it is, with developers trying to figure out the right price for full blown titles.
That is for sure.
And trying to sell a mod for a game for $30. If indie developers are having trouble with games for $30, a mod is just out of the question, unless it's literally like a brand new game within the game itself, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the invisible hand, right? Like, will they be able to sell it for $30? If not, they'll bring the price down.
I mean, there's only one that's worth even close to $30, and that's like Felixar, like I told you before. That like really huge mod with like 30 hours of gameplay with.
And it sounds like DLC, right? It sounds like an expansion.
Yeah, it's like an expansion. It's almost as big as it is an expansion. It's what it was.
And those can sell for $30. I mean, even kind of expensive, but.
But again, $30 for a UI change, like, come on, please.
Yeah, or like $5 for a sword. I was looking at some.
But hey, we're the customers, right? If we don't pay for it, it doesn't sell, they drop the price down. Maybe then we see, you know, skin changes are cents. Yeah. Maybe they don't even charge. They just become free again. They find that like, yeah, I can put a price tag on it, but nobody's going to download it.
And I think what you said, Charles, a few minutes ago regarding that, eventually the prices, I think, would have normalized at some point. But we only really had like three, 4 days. This went up like, what, Thursday or Friday of last week?
Yeah, something like that.
And then it was taken down Monday. So we really had maybe 4 or 5 days of this new market. And you can't really gauge the pricing of things in that such a short period of time.
Yeah, but it wasn't worth it to Valve to see that play out, because, I mean, what their strongest currency is their goodwill.
Exactly.
And is the way that their customers love their marketplace.
Yeah. I mean, if it was,
we don't have much of an option of other marketplaces that are any good, but even still.
People are so angry. that they in comments were talking about going to Origin, and then people were like saying good things about Origin. I'm like, you guys are really stretching it here.
What's going on there? If they are saying that,
then Valve, you need to change your ways right now.
Is the sky green? The grass is blue.
It's like Origin isn't too bad. I'm like, Origin is really bad. Like you're so in full of rage that
and
you can't
just
see.
And it's so different, right? I mean, it's like it's a totally different ecosystem. It just happens to be a digital distribution network. But like, similarities on there.
If EA made the decision, they would never turn back. Yeah. They would never turn back from that. Valve, I'm saying it's great that Valve actually turned back. And I think I said before to someone else, it's just, if they were to say like, all right, guys, we made a mistake, let it go. I think people would, like, cooler heads would prevail. And people would be like, all right, great. Like, that's what we want you to do. Just stop this. Just stop this now, please. And they did. And I think that saved them in the end. Because like, they could, I mean, someone said like, this is going to hurt Valve. Like, nothing is going to hurt Valve. But this isn't going to help them in the long run, because reputation is so important, like you said. It's their goodwill. You know what I mean? People's belief in them that matters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think long run, I don't think this will hurt them. I mean, I think this incident, this weekend.
If they didn't reverse it.
That's some serious damage. Because it's a reversal of what we've come to expect from them, which is their respect for us as customers, and like that they actually hear us, that they are willing to acknowledge when they make mistakes. And I think with some other aspects of decisions they've made in the past, we've wondered if maybe how willing are they to reverse decisions? Because they do roll stuff out really aggressively, really fast, and they make big sweeping changes. They are very aggressive with their sales, and it can hurt devs sometimes. And there's been a little bit of that coming out. So this was, the reversal of the decision was obviously good. And I think they will then come back with a new way of rolling this out. We'll be skeptical, but like they'll engage in it in a different way, and they'll be like, "What do you guys think of doing it this way?" I think they'll probably ask the community more.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't think this will ultimately hurt them, just because they were so luckily they're so quick to change in both directions, right? They they completely pulled a feature I'm sure they've been working on for a long time. Like, imagine all the people who all the legal, all the financial, all the UI, like all the infrastructure to get this working. And they were hoping it would be a new revenue stream too, right? For them and for Bethesda. And to just pull it all, that's bold. It's bold.
Yeah.
But they have to do that though.
They would have lost more money.
Yeah.
It's a business decision.
I think Bethesda is also a clear signal to Bethesda not to do this too. If they were thinking about doing this for Fallout 4, don't do this for Fallout 4.
Now, Bethesda made any comments? Because
they did. It was wild because they went to they defended their mod. It was only a few hours before the Valve post. They completely defended why they did. What was their thought pattern? Everything.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Valve, hours later, were like that. We're like, oh,
yeah.
I think it could hurt them.
Yeah,
it could hurt Bethesda.
Yeah, I think the big surprise for me is just how quickly they were able to, they rescinded this, because I was telling my friends the other day that I hate making topical posts like this, because by the time my post went up Monday, it was like 2-3 hours later, the whole thing went down. And it's just so interesting to see how quick Valve was able to rescind this. And as you were saying, Charles, they obviously spent a lot of time and money on this. Valve is known for making big sweeping changes, but they're also known for spending a lot of time on their projects. It took them a very long time before they added in the ability to stream games online. They did the beta for that, and so on. And I also like to point out that I think this is our first podcast in a while where we actually had a slam against Origin EA again. So good job, everyone, on that front.
Yeah, I mean, they deserve all that damage.
Now, another part of this debate that I do want to talk about on the podcast is regarding essentially whether or not modders or even content creators are within their right to charge for content. Because this is a very big deal, especially for someone like me, because I'm obviously trying to make money off of my content with Game Wisdom. Now, I have a Patreon campaign set up. We've mentioned this on every podcast. It's on the front page and so on. But the problem with that is there's a huge difference between asking for a donation versus demanding money or charging for content. As you said earlier in the cast, Charles, you can't take something that was free and then stick a price tag on it. You can obviously take something that costs money and lower the price, but you can't go the other way. And talking about modding in particular, this is one of those things that has also spurred a lot of debate regarding quote-unquote entitlement. Are modders entitled to receive money from their work? Now, I know, Charles, you brought up earlier in the cast that a lot of mods were made by people for the love of the game. They want to make the game better. They want to make this something that everyone can enjoy, so they're not expecting any money. But as we've talked about, when the option is there, what is most people going to do? Are you going to leave money on the table, or are you going to try to earn some money? So for both of you, in terms of this debate as to whether or not modders should be justified in getting paid for their content, what do you think about this? And this time, we'll start with you, Charles.
I think they deserve to be paid. I guess my approach to that question is try and see. You know, if you charge money for it and someone pays you, then yes, you deserve to be paid for it. Just because no one's forcing you. These aren't, we're not talking about healthcare or car insurance. People choose whether they want to download a mod for free or buy a mod or whatnot. So I don't know if deserve comes into it much, except on the basic level of you put hard work and love and creativity into something. Sure, I think that has value. Is there a dollar sign next to the value? Yeah, maybe, depending on if you pay for it. I'm the kind of player who, and I think all gamers are a bit weird in what they think is worth money and what they think is not. There are games I will definitely pay $60 for one time, and I'm excited for it, and it needs to get good reviews. It needs to be made by a reputable AAA company, probably. And I won't pay $60 for an indie game, probably. If I think, you know, maybe they haven't made anything in the past, the reviews aren't great, I won't pay $60 for that. I might pay $10. And then there's other games like in browser. I'm not going to pay a dime for a browser game. Those are free games. And that's in part, like we were saying previously, it's about expectations, market expectations. If I go into Kongregate, imagine one of those games you had to pay for and all the others are free. Heck no, I'm just going to play something else. And that's already fundamentally weird, right? Those are all games. Why don't I pay for all of them? And why would I pay a whole lot, $60, for some, and I would refuse to pay for others? So I think it's a bit of a market test. You deserve the money, as it were, if someone is willing to pay you for it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
What do you think, Ken?
Okay. And what do you think, Ken?
I think maybe they can charge it more like a service than, you know, I mean, I think that might be easier for people to swallow. That, you know, because people do understand they're doing it for the love of the game and they're putting a lot of their time in, you know, having a donation service is probably adequate. Now, I know people have also said that they've made almost no money on donations, but I think maybe it's part of it is ease. Like, because, you know, if you could just take money directly from someone's Steam wallet and put it into your account, you know, I think that would work pretty well. You just press a button and mission accomplished. That would be that easy. Put in the amount you want and that's it. I think sometimes that's the issue. Not for everybody, but I think for the older audience that has some sort of income, I think it would be easier for them. But again, like, when we talk about money and mods, there's a certain level of corruption that goes into it. Like you said before, you have that sense that modders themselves think, well, I made all these mods and everyone else is charging. Why aren't I charging? And then people are thinking, the people that use the mods or people that are a fan of mods now see modders as people that aren't doing it for the love of the game anymore. People that are trying to just try to make like money. And there's kind of like an ominous, like nefarious thing that people kind of feel now when they think of mods that are pay, not pay. It's kind of like the other day I went to an event and I thought it was called Philly Tech Week. I thought it was going to be great. You know, I'm going to go to a show. They're going to show me all this cool technology, maybe VR stuff, maybe AR stuff, maybe robotics. When I got there, it was a networking event. So I was just like there and I was talking to people and people saw my girlfriend's company and my company. And they came up to us like offered like, hey, I can do all this. I can do that. I'm like, that's not what I was looking for. I was looking for people to talk about.
Expectations defied.
Yeah. I wanted to just go there and talk technology. Like, oh, cool. Robotics. Like, what kind of system do you use? Like, this virtual reality, like how are you dealing with this kind of thing? But nope, it was all just people like, you know, yeah, I have some tech here, but I want to talk about business here. I'm like, ugh. And it's the same kind of way. Like it's not a pure event anymore. The pure event of loving technology is an event for extending your contacts. And it's same way here. It's not just about mods anymore. It's, you know, mods and how will they make money off me with their mods. And it's just not the same. And that unbridled amount of collaboration and creativity and joyousness that comes with mods gets destroyed. And I think that I'm glad the system is gone, because this community can't flourish if it's not kind of free from those bonds of greed. Now, I don't want to sound like an idealist or whatever, but that's how I feel.
It is an interesting shift from intrinsic value to extrinsic, right? Why are you doing it? You just want to make Skyrim better, or you want to make some money. But it is also, it leans towards, well, why does any developer charge anything for any game? You know, like, why don't we make the modding community so big that it extends out to all games, and all games are free, and we share and share alike, and it's all wonderful, and it's Wild West of the entire industry.
It doesn't, but things that you're thinking about it as direct comparison between games and mods. But mods are a whole different kind of beast, and in fact, right, I mean, even right, with all of Valve's like analysts and all that, they still couldn't see that this would be a terrible, horrible idea.
It's not a small gaming dev community. It's the modding community, and it's separate. It's different than the game dev community.
Yeah, it's huge. Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. And you can impose whatever you want on devs per se, because they're going to have to use your marketplace. But with mods, it affects a really large amount of people. And you think it's niche, but everyone has dipped their toes in mods in one way or another. So, especially if you're a big lover of certain games, like any Bethesda games.
Yeah, I'm looking at the Bethesda blog post response, and something that stands out as surprising to me, because a lot of it's kind of boilerplate what you'd expect them to say. Mm-hmm. But one is, this is too small in our eyes, they say. Only 8% of the Skyrim audience has ever used a mod, and less than 1% has ever made one. Totally believe that less than 1% of it. Only 8% has used a mod? I thought they were like necessary at some point. Especially, well, I wonder if by Skyrim audience, they are including all the consoles.
Because if it's like, consoles, then it's 0%. Okay. Yeah,
can't include that.
Can't do that, because that'd be 0%, right?
Well, and an interesting thing we haven't talked about is mods are a PC thing. We're talking about games in general, kind of, but really, no, it's just the PC audience. It's PC, Skyrim. Mm-hmm. It's PC.
That's why we're PC Master Race. That's the big part of it, right? It's mods.
And that we have this whole other dimension to the way we play and interact with our games that the console audience, they simply receive, right? You get whatever gets put in the box. And for PC gamers, that's just not true.
Look at the original Skyrim release screenshots from consoles, and then look at my screenshots. It's a different game.
It's an engine that plays, in some ways, whatever you want.
Yeah. And I think another part, getting back to talking about the quality or the range of mods, this is something that I mentioned in my post, is what happens if people try to charge money for mods that are mainly fixes or UI concerns. I know you talked about earlier regarding trying to charge for the UI enhanced mod for Skyrim. What was it called again?
Sky UI.
Sky UI.
It's probably the most used one. Yeah. The first thing you go to is Sky UI.
Yeah. And I mean, the example that I mentioned in my post would probably be like DS Fix for Dark Souls, which, for those of you who didn't play Dark Souls 1 on the PC, it was horribly not optimized for the platform. I think it was locked to like 30 frames per second. It had a lot of bugs and issues, and it just didn't work well. And a modder basically took it upon himself to fix it. And DS Fix became so popular that it's actually listed on the store page as saying, hey, if you want to play Dark Souls, maybe you should download this mod. Now, what would happen if he decided to say, oh, if I can charge it, maybe I should charge, $10, $15 for it, because everyone practically needs this mod for the game.
Yeah, that is interesting. Because obviously, if From Software made that, they cannot charge for that. You can't charge for a patch. Also, had it never been free, but it had been charged from the get-go and made by a separate person like it is, I think maybe you could charge for it. I mean, I personally would say, yeah, that sounds like it has value to me. And, if it's priced right, maybe $5, I'd pay for that. Improve the whole UI, make the game super playable. So that's really interesting, the expectations there. Like, if From Software made a fix to their game and was like, yeah, but we're charging extra. I mean, it cost us money to make these fixes, so shell out. That would, nobody, everyone would be so mad.
I mean, you could do that, but then again, modders themselves, it goes against their own mantras, right? Mm-hmm. Like, modding really isn't thought about that
the
way.
Current modders, you know, if we're talking about this new independent crowdsourced DLC people who are maybe a new community, and it is their business, right? They've got a little LLC set up, and all they do, imagine a guy who all he does, he's a UI expert, and he just goes into the latest game that allows modding, and he makes the UI amazing, and he charges $5 for each one. And when you get a new game and the UI stinks, you go right to his workshop page, you pay $5 for the big UI improvement, and enjoy your little game. Well, I could see that.
What about legality, though? Couldn't the companies come down on him if they wanted?
Well, and not if Steam is able to roll this out, right?
Oh, yeah, that's true. I mean, they'll take 75% of what he makes. Oh, God.
Oh. And then, of course, that he's not charging $5, right? He's got to charge more.
He's like way
he's
more.
He's
got to
make a living on this, yeah.
There's no way you make a living off 75% charge. God dang, that's still incredible that it was that high of an amount. Why?
Yeah, and that'll be different, I think, per game. Yeah. Per company, because they'll work out deals, and that'll wiggle around too.
I also think that people are pretty. I hope people understand that ZeniMax and Bethesda, even though ZeniMax owned Bethesda, technically they were just like a split. But ZeniMax is the one that makes all the legal decisions, and Bethesda's just the developer.
Yeah, yeah.
So like, whenever ZeniMax does something evil, people are like, Bethesda's doing evil things. Like, nah, it's really ZeniMax.
Yeah, it's certainly not the production guys who are like making your game. They're not making these decisions.
Yeah, they're the programmers that like love games. Like, you know what? I hate people that play my games. I want to hurt them severely. Here we go.
Yeah, it's all their fault, right?
Yeah, those slimy devs.
Yeah. All right. And this has been a very interesting cast so far, but I think we're going to start to wrap things up because we've touched on a lot of great points. And again, there's still so much left to the future. So to wrap this up, I have two more topics left for both of you. The first one is the Fallout. I know, Ken, you want to talk more about this earlier in the cast, so I figure we'll come back to it. As we've said, Valve's greatest strength is their goodwill towards their community. It's really been the backbone for what's kept them as number one for so long. And why we continue to make fun of Origin whenever we have a chance to. Because the community outreach and support is night and day. Anytime Valve tries or loses that community outreach, they're going to, go hand over fist to get it back. And as we've said, this only lasted about 4 or 5 days, so the full fallout and implications of this haven't really yet been realized. So for both of you, I just want to get your opinions as what do you think is going to be the outcome of this as we look more maybe like down the next month or even down the next year of this incident? And we'll start with you, Ken.
I would say there's going to be a lot of hurt feelings because a lot of people threw each other under the bus in the situation, right? Mm-hmm. Claiming that, I mean, example, that one guy that, the fishing guy that made the mod for fishing, mm-hmm. He implied that the people of Nexus was making money off the workshop, mm-hmm. even though they were taking a stance against the paid mods.
Yeah, I think they said like 5% or something.
Right. Mm-hmm. So that's not good for that guy.
how is Nexus making money?
They're a contributor to the paid workshop, so they're going to be making money off of it, I believe.
Fascinating.
Something like that. So pretty much they were like, doing the politician thing, saying one thing, do another. There you go. Mm-hmm. Trying to get the goodwill, but also making money off of it at the same time. Again, but the way that Bethesda had that whiplash effect of defending themselves, and they'd be like, yeah, that was the right decision. Suddenly, it's probably not good for them. I think it's really clear, even more clear, because it was already something an irritating topic for people, but their customer service is atrocious. It's very bad, and there's not enough people working in their systems to deal with that many people. And when you have that, I think that's one thing. People love Valve and people love Steam, but they all understand that Steam has a terrible customer service, and that's something that's a clear weakness that they should work on. Mm-hmm. But it's also really hard to do with that many users, yeah. Users of all ages too.
Yeah, for sure. And especially when they don't want to half-ass it, right? They want to do it well. And Gabe said, like, you've backed a dump truck of content into our inbox. And it, and even though they've made a decision to reverse it, they're not going to not respond to the comments and complaints, which is, you might be tempted to be like, all right, we heard you. We heard you. We're not going to, I'm not going to respond to your email. This is done. But I think they really will go back into each of them. And that's very expensive. But again, on the topic of goodwill, it is worth it to them to make that effort to spend that money just to keep the community happy.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of like a war. Like, the war has been won by the consumer, in a way, or the fans, even though technically they just, it was the money reason why they backed out. But there's clear winners and losers in terms of what's happened. Because, again, there's modders that would took a stance. Because I was downloading, again, remember that mad dash and download mods.
Oh, that is a bad place
to be in. They took their stances for paid mods, or took their stances against paid mods. But, like, even Banner saying, we hate, like, our mods be free forever. Screw paid mods. Screw Workshop. And then people were, like, praising them like crazy and donating tons of money in the same time. And now that this whole thing blown over, they're looking even better. Yeah, they're looking even way better. And, you know, and the same thing goes with the people that supported it are they're in the crapshoot right now. God dang, I wouldn't want to show my face. Hopefully they didn't attach their real names to their accounts. But it's kind of thing. Like, Gamer Rage is something you could definitely monetize off of. Because I remember, and this is kind of a side thing, but remember Mass Effect 3's ending? Mm-hmm. The whole controversy over that? You play Mass Effect, Charles?
I definitely know the controversy. I actually haven't played the series, though.
Okay, well, pretty much it was a hero's journey, and they were like, you know what? Instead of, like, finishing it, like, even though we, in the way we should, we're like, now.
Are you going to lay some spoilers down?
No, I'm not going to. I'm going to simply say the whole thing was set up with hero's journey structure, and they decided to just, you know, not finish their story in an appropriate way to the structure. And there's a reason why that structure exists, you know? Anyways, the point is it caused a lot of controversy and rage. And the writer of the first and second game came out in terms of his response to, like, oh, what's going on? Like, please help us, writer of the original games. And he said a few things, and you see thousands and thousands of comments saying, what are you doing now? What are you doing? We'll give you money. We'll donate money. What are you making new games? We'll buy your games.
Wow.
It was like, So he could have made, if he really wanted to, it was like, he could have put some links out and he could have made like millions with that rage.
I'm not making anything currently, but if you want to support my next project, here's the money button.
He could have easily done that, and he would have made some major moolah from that. And I'm saying, like, sometimes people will you know, exploit that situation, and they could have easily done it. I think, and again, during this whole situation, I think people really did do that, and I'm sure the modders that didn't support it got a lot more donations than they would have ever seen, ever, actually. Because, again, people that have had donation buttons up there have only made, you know, 3 people ever donate money to them. And it was probably like a dollar. So it's just interesting to see what has come out. But I think what I don't like is that kind of like wound that's trying to heal. Because it was like once a happy and joyous community and a bombshell was dropped in the middle of town. Now we're just picking up the pieces. And there's going to be ill will forever, like kind of just tied in with the people that are part of that community.
Yeah, even if Valve doesn't feel much of that, right? I think you're right that this shook stuff up in the modding community, and it's always been a little bit of a topic of, you know, who's making money off of it, like who's making a mod hoping to get hired by the company, right? And that actually this is a job application, so it's not totally for its intrinsic love of the game. There's a little bit of like, well, yeah, but I hope that Bethesda notices me and like hires me on.
Listen, like, I think people will accept that, because if you have skin in the game, then you're going to make a better mod. So people probably support that decision. If you're using it as
a portfolio
piece.
Not if you want to make money.
Well, if you're trying to make money off the mod itself, I think people wouldn't like that. But if you're
saying,
because
you
like,
indirectly want to make money, right? You want a job.
Yeah. But, you know, it's both for the love and both for your own future gains. But it's not short-term gains what you're looking for. So, and people will support you, and they will, because what you're looking for is reputation. So
yeah, there's some honor there, right?
Yeah, there is. And I don't think it's a nefarious, you know, slant. I think they're doing it for the right reasons.
Yeah, and of course, in the moment, you're not benefiting financially, and you may never, right? Bethesda doesn't need to hire you.
Other companies might.
Right.
Bungie hired the Falxauer guy, and he's probably made Destiny or helped make Destiny. So there you go.
I wonder if does he still make mods, or is he now just
probably? He's probably not. He probably just works now.
I mean, it takes a lot of time to make these things, especially like the really good ones.
Yeah. I mean, like, I feel like all the small ones are made by like part timers. Like, you know, I do some programming here and I do some side projects here for fun. So why not? Yeah. But
it would
again,
be interesting to know the demographics of the modding community. Like, are they mainly people who want to get into the industry as developers but are in school, or are they hobbyists? Like, what, you know, what's their age generally, their gender? It'd be interesting to know more data on them. I imagine that's what Valve is doing right now.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Who is Valve, this community?
Valve loves metrics. They love metrics. They even had an economist on staff, all that. Wait. The economist that was on staff went to work for the Ukrainian government. Isn't that right? No. The Greek government, something like that. He jumped from Valve to like a leader of some financial position in a major country somewhere.
That is interesting stuff.
What a jump. I think the Valve thing was probably more complicated though. Honestly.
It's just certainly very fast moving and really capricious.
Yeah.
Just gamers are weird.
Yeah, I mean, it is such a large community because again, I think gaming itself is pretty universal.
Yeah, and it's large, it's diverse, and we're not even consistent in how we behave either.
Nope.
And we're really informed, like as consumers, we do so much research and we're constantly looking at like game news and reading reviews. And then we open up our wallets all the time. Like gamers spend so much money on this stuff. You know, we're a really interesting market.
Yeah. And it's funny. I was telling my girlfriend too, like if gamers were as informed or as active in the political like space, then they would change the world so quick, you know, all those evil things that would happen would be brought to light. Because here, like, even the smallest, like, in gaming, even the smallest thing, someone's LinkedIn account is enough to spark a huge controversy.
Totally.
You know what I mean? Like, all that would be enough. And, like, nothing's really in the dark. It will leak. And people will speculate. And people will cause rage and a controversy. Though, you know, it's funny, though. I don't know. Do you think, and this is kind of an ancillary subject, but what do you think about games journalism? Like, do you think that that is as valid as journalism we see in regular news? It just seems something that's wanted to get your opinion on.
Oh man, talk about a whole nother topic. But it has intersection here. Like the only reason, no, that's not true. I was going to say the only reason we know about this is because of games media. But of course, you know, if you're just on Steam and on Skyrim, I saw a lot of comments on there where people were like, so there's these dollar signs next to mods. When did that happen exactly? Being all confused. But I think many people learned about it by reading on a Kotaku article or Wired.com had an article now about Steam pulling the feature. And, you know, where are we getting our news from? And game reviews are not like movie reviews. They're often not very critical, or they're poorly written or clearly very subjective and have relatively low standards overall. I mean, I think it had different origins, grew up differently. And so it is a bit of a different beast.
Mm-hmm. I think it's just perceived differently too than normal news media.
Yeah, certainly.
But it's
interesting when normal news media attempts to cover games.
Yeah,
they don't get it at all, and they make all these references that are wrong. And you're like, don't talk about this.
You're out of your depth.
Yeah.
By the way, I found out through Reddit pretty much. The subject was so big. It was so big. I mean, first post.
Posts on Reddit. That's a big deal.
It wasn't like normal amounts of like 3,000 upvotes. It was 9,000 upvotes at one point. Almost 10,000 upvotes. I'm like, oh my god.
That shows how much intersection there is between gamers and Reddit. You know, and the sort of
like the president's you can ask me anything was 10,000 something. You almost reached that. Oh my god. And I'm sure everyone that doesn't play games are like, what the hell is this? I don't care about this. Why is this up here? But so many people are raging.
It's not a quick thing to understand. You're like, wait, they're charging for mods. Okay, why is that a problem?
What is mods?
Why is everyone upset?
What's mods stand for?
Mod? I've never heard of Skyrim.
What's Steam? Steam has a workshop? What is all this?
So many people have just never, even who know Nintendo, they know Sega. They've just never heard of Valve. They've never heard of Steam. Never heard of Bethesda.
I'm saying there's that many people raging that all those downvotes are coming from normal human beings.
Yeah.
Got out, you know, way out.
They are out upvoted. Yeah. Because the passion of that smaller group is so intense.
It was two posts that was up there, and then when they reversed it, those two posts were up there too.
Boom. Yeah.
You know, it's crazy how far it goes up there. But again, I think, like I said before, if Valve just reversed their decision on Monday, then I think they can actually do some real repairs to their PR. Mm-hmm. And then everything will go back to status quo, which is what they want, and they did. Yeah,
you want to stay off that front page of Reddit normally.
they made the right decision, and people, if you read those posts, they weren't they were happy, they were joyous, they were praising Gaben once more as their divine savior of gaming, whatever.
Yeah, like long live the king.
Right, exactly. Because at one point it was all like, guys, we just realized how awful it is that we all use Steam so much. We need to find alternatives. Origin. We're like, oh, we really don't have an alternative to it. So we're just glad that Valve is the company they are. Mm-hmm. But again, that quote was all over the place. The two quotes that were all over the place. One is, you either see yourself become be the hero or see yourself become the villain.
Yeah, live long enough as the hero and you see yourself become the villain.
And or hell is paved with good intentions.
Yeah.
Like those two quotes I kept seeing over and over again.
Yeah, and they will all fade. Memory, they'll just be quotes used for someone else later. Mm-hmm.
But passionate, by the way, it's definitely something that I would say, because by the way, with the Reddit posts, they were pretty, I would say, reasonable. But if you look at like the Steam pages, they were ridiculous. Death threats and all this misogynist stuff. And I mean, 4chan decided to fax Valve a bunch of black sheets of paper in mass just to screw up their printer ink. Because every company has a fax, so...
Oh, jeez.
I think it's pretty funny.
Damn. All right. Charles, do you have any more thoughts on the fallout of this, or have we got everything out?
Nope, I'm done.
Okay. With that, my final topic, then, for both of you, is how would this be improved? Now, obviously, we've talked about that this is going to come back. I mean, Valve is known for making these quick changes and then bringing them back. They did it with Greenlight, they did it with Early Access, and there's a very good chance we won't be waiting too long before this monetization will come back. Maybe it won't be in Skyrim, maybe it will be in another game, but I have a feeling that this is not the last we're going to see of it. So, for the two of you, if you had the option to make changes to it, to improve it, to make it be adopted more readily and more friendly, what would you do? And we'll start with Charles.
I think you start with a new game, not an existing game, or an existing game that doesn't have a modding community or a history of mods. Like, I don't think you can do this with the next Elder Scrolls. Yes, it doesn't have mods yet, but it does have a community that's going to jump right onto it and be interested in checking that out. I don't think you could add it to Civ. I think you got to start with something new. And I think Valve would be wise to do it with one of their own products, so they can be like, we are building this into the state of this game, and it has a different culture. It's not the same as a Wild West modding community that does it for the love. Like, everyone knows that when you make content for this game, part of it is because you wanna make a buck or you wanna make pennies, you know. Also, the revenue split could be way more generous to modders because you don't have three parties. You don't have Bethesda, Valve, and mod creator. You can just have Valve and the mod creator. And because it's Valve's own experiment, they could go crazy generous with it. They could really like give almost all the money to the modder, or rename. So I think you got to sort of rebrand it, start fresh, and maybe distance, give it a little time from the Skyrim problem, and do it differently. The thing is, I think that would be successful, but that isn't really where Valve wants to take it ultimately. I think they do want all of Steam Workshop to be a marketplace, and they do want it to eventually encompass the next Bethesda game. So how do you bridge that gap? How do you go from a small Valve-owned, started experiment to eventually have it eat up the modding community and everyone just charges for their mods? I don't know if you can make that transition, and I think that is where they want to go. That's going to be hard.
Yeah, and I have my thoughts on it, but I'll go last. So Ken, you're up next.
I said before, percentages is the big deal to me. Like, 75% is ridiculous. Look at other services that offer development or applications. They take only 30% or less. Some even do 10%, So, again, it seems atrocious. Like, what's even the point? Like, the only reason you would do it is because, again, it's take it or leave it. And that's no way of going about it. And all you're doing is corrupting a community for pennies, you know? It's, I mean, you're not making pennies, but the modder's making pennies. Mm-hmm. And I think what you said before is true. However, I don't think I could ever see it go completely taking over games like Skyrim and or any Bethesda game. I don't think that is the community it's for. Possibly Civ 5, maybe. I don't know. That's a hard kind of thing. I mean, it's possible there too. But I think what you said, games from the ground up and games that Valve owns have a lot higher possibilities for success than things that have mining communities that have been there for 10, 20 years, you know, a long time. Mm-hmm. It's just not for them, you know? It's like if I were to, you know, it's like say for conventions, for example. And, you know, now, like, everyone cosplays there. It's fun. Everyone cosplays, people make costumes, stuff like that. How about if they charged you extra for wearing cosplay? Like, how would you feel about that? I mean, yes, they could make a better experience and people would make better cosplays, but that would really destroy the spirit of going to a convention.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So the same thing goes with modding. So again, it's hard for them to make that balance. And I think what's going to happen is this is going to be sectioned off. It's just going to be these kind of games are applicable and these games are not. I think that's fine. But I'm also kind of scared that devs are going to try, and not no slight against you because your game's based around modifications, but some companies will try to make games directly for, you know, monetized mods.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think that we'll see, like, it might become bastardized, like free-to-play. Because free-to-play itself is not a bad system. It's pretty fair, and we see some games do great, like League of Legends and stuff like that. But then we see all these mobile games that do it atrociously bad, like mm-hmm. way exploitive.
Yeah.
And because of that, free-to-play will never have a good name or good reputation. And because of what happened with the Skyrim modifications, it may never have a good name either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you're right that there'll be people who implement it well and people who don't. People have developers who have really bad revenue splits and ones who have really generous ones. What will there be more of? You know, what will it have a good name or a bad name, like you're saying with free-to-play? I think free-to-play generally amongst gamers has a bad name, and there are some notable exceptions like League of Legends. Like, yeah, that's free-to-play, but it's one of the good ones. But you know, we're not talking about Candy Crush and, you know, all these others that are constantly wanting you to connect to your Facebook, and they're mm-hmm. creating pay gates and pay-to-wins and or they're limiting how much you can actually play the game, but you can pay more to play more. Mm-hmm.
It's awful. In fact, free to play is so notorious that both social and mobile games have bad connotations too to regular gamers. Like they're all part of the same ecosystem. Like at least in terms of terminology.
Even though a lot of us play a bunch of them, we still don't like them.
We don't. We don't like. Yeah, we might play. It's like junk food kind of thing.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it just stinks that
it's
such
so gross,
a great.
But it's so delicious.
Yeah, it's a great idea. When it's poorly implemented by all these exploitative companies, it's seen as bad overall. So you can't tout that as a feature. You're just using the system.
Yeah.
And I just hope that mods, at least paid mods, don't go that route. Mm-hmm. And hopefully with Valve's oversight, it won't. But again, them choosing Skyrim makes me question their decision making. And hopefully they really will learn from this experience.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine it having gone well. By using Skyrim first.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think, Charles, you had a really good point that if Valve's going to do this, I think they are going to try to go all in. They want everything to be monetized. But again, that brings up the conflict that we've talked about over this cast, that when you have games that have pre-developed community or modding groups, to put money into that is just going to cause a lot of trouble. And I would say I wrote a lot about this in my post in terms of what I would like to see. I agree with you, Ken, that there needs to be a higher royalty rate. There needs to be a greater incentive to do this to justify basically pricing your mods like this. But there also needs to be protections for the consumer. I do think that in order for there to be higher quality mods, there needs to be some kind of review or vetting process, like there is with Team Fortress, Counter-Strike, Dota 2. And as I think, Charles, you said earlier in the cast, that the cream will rise to the top. If someone consistently makes high-quality mods, great stuff, it's going to get continually voted up, and that person's going to get that recognition. And then I say, yes, that person should be given the right to sell their mods. If they're a very valued community member, they have the talent to make this stuff, they should be rewarded for their efforts. And we need to see basically more guidelines from Valve to protect the consumer from, you know, we said so many people just immediately started to steal mods, they started to copy other people's mods. There needs to be more guidelines in place. And this is exactly the same conversation we had with Early Access. And when the original version of that was just a complete wild west of everyone putting their game up, there was no, Valve basically kept out of it. They didn't make any claims about what should be on there, what shouldn't be. And then after enough complaints, they revised the rules and the guidelines. And again, this goes back to expectations. If you're buying a game and there's no mention that people are going to be selling mods, people are going to get pissed off. But if you give them the proper information, let it all be laid out black and white, people are generally a little bit more well-receiving on that front.
Yeah, that sounds right to me.
Ken, any thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, that those are all pretty valid points.
Okay. All right, I think with that, we're going to wrap up this conversation. It's been a great one, and it's great that we were able to get somewhat timely to the matter. And as we said at the start, even though it has been rescinded for right now as a recording, I think we all pretty much assume that it's going to be back in some form or another, maybe... I don't even know. Could be a few days, weeks, months, whatever. But I don't think this is the last we're going to hear of this discussion. So, with that, we're going to end things here. Charles, Ken, again, it's been a pleasure talking to both of you. I think this is the first time the three of us have had a conversation on Skype in a long time. But, yeah, it's always great to have both of you on.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Yep, no problem.
And Ken, hopefully, now that we're in the summertime, we can have you back on for some regular cast. Hopefully, once my long list of developer interviews are done.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things I want to implement with 2.0 Game Wisdom, and you know, rethinking about how we want to navigate the site and how we encourage reading different posts, because you have so many posts, you post so regularly. That I can't export your database out. Like it just crashes immediately. So I have to figure out a way to like chunk it.
Yeah. And Charles, again, it was great talking to you so soon after the educational cast. We're in the middle of preparing a part 2. So hopefully we'll be talking again real soon. And when Artisans is ready to come out early access, we'll be sure to have you back on to talk more about that.
Great. Sounds good.
All right. So with that said, for those of you listening, thanks so much for tuning in to this very topical edition of the Perceptive Podcast. And if you'd like to support Game Wisdom, there are several options available. Obviously, as we've talked about over the course of this podcast, we have our Patreon campaign to secure some much-needed monthly funding for the site. That will allow me to continue putting up more content while paying those nasty bills. You can find all the information for that under the Patreon campaign on the front page, as well as just typing in Josh Beister or Game Wisdom on Patreon.com. And if you would like to submit a guest piece for the site or be a future podcast guest, either for a regular cast, developer interview, or for one of our roundtables, you can find all the information for that under Submissions Wanted on the front page. And last but not least, if you'd like to tune into my daily Let's Plays, where I'll stream games and talk about them, or talk about the general thought process of playing them, you can find me on Twitch under my handle of GWBeister. And all the videos I record there do get uploaded to YouTube and the Game Wisdom channel there. Thanks again for tuning in. Have a great rest of the week, and we will talk to you again next time. Take care, everybody.